Hey, folks, thanks for tuning into the BAMF podcast. I'm your host, Mike Lafferty. And let me quickly play our high-quality video auditory intro music to assure you this is a high-quality podcast. Just 1 second. That's good for the soul right there. Thanks for tuning in tonight. Tonight, we have very special guests. I can't talk. It's COVID. It's fried my neurons. Cynthia Miller and Barrick Blackburn from Spectrum Games are here to talk about their new fun and funky RPG, Biff Bam Kapow, that aims to capture the the tone, if you will, of a certain 1960s superhero. We don't want to say parody, but camp
homage.
There we go. And I'll get that up and show it. And you guys have some just amazing art. As a fan of Batman 66, I gotta say, this book looks like just a big, giant, jiggling hill of fun. Can you tell us a little bit about the inspiration for this?
Jiggling hill of fun. I love that. Well, you know, the thing is it's something I've toyed with doing for a long time. I wasn't actually a fan of the show until 89. In fact, as I explained to my afterwards in the book, I actually hated it when I was younger because I was, you know, Neil Adams, Denny O'Neill. That was my Batman. And so when I first saw the Adam West Burt Ward show, I was probably 10. I'm like, what kind of outrage is this? This can't, no. So I hated it, and then back in 89, when Batmania started rolling with the Michael Keaton, Tim Burton movie, I was like thirsting for new Batman content, and then I think it was the Family Channel, WGN, one of the two started showing it back in the day, and I'm like, I'm fine, I'll suffer through it, and grew to not only like it, but love it, and shared it with Mike, and we just watched about 4 episodes of it earlier tonight. My oldest son just bought the set of Blu-rays, and
we just lost Cynthia. So,
Barrick, sure,
I'm tagging you in, buddy.
All right, hot tag. There we go. So I think that when Cynthia sort of brought this idea up, I think she was right on point in that it really deserved treatment as a different game than a normal superheroes game, and that's nothing against any superheroes game, but it's very, very, very different. And in order to sort of capture that feel of the game, you know, I know she sort of, you know, has been working for a while on figuring out sort of what the system would feel like and how it would work. And I think she was inspired by the intention system that we came up with for Retro Star and has really loved it and used it for other properties, the On the Air property that you did for the radio game. And I know that this is something I think that inspired her to do this. And, you know, I'm super psyched because I love the Biff Bam Kapow sort of usage in terms of game mechanics. And as you mentioned, the art is just great and totally evokes the mood. And you know, the previous image you had really has that sort of, you know, it's got the Batman campy, but it's also got some of this, like, sort of, like, you know, much too good for Batman art, if you will. You know, like, it's you know, way too good for what the old Batman TV show would have been. So, and I think that, you know, that's a show where, you know, failure should be celebrated. Failure was part of the genre, and that's, you know, very much what Retro Star was designed for, and that's what, you know, this, you know, was designed for, sort of embracing that failure and embracing sort of the pacing of the game as opposed to sort of forcing in a square peg round hole situation, you know, with a game mechanic that doesn't necessarily work, but you know, your GM makes it flavorful. So this in a sense, the game mechanics drive you towards that flavor.
Sweet. Yeah, we played Retro Star in this very podcast a couple of years ago.
We sure did.
And that was, that was a lot of fun. That was a good time. I think Cynthia might be back. Hang on 1 second. Sure. Cynthia, are you there with us?
Yes. I am, at least hopefully for the time being. And I was sitting there babbling like a fool, not even really paying attention to the fact that it said that there was too much.
You are now represented as a Sideways Sylvania logo, just FYI.
What the hell? That
It must be the nefarious dealings of the cyber hacker.
It probably is. You know, of course, you know, back we can call him cyber hacker. We're in the 60s
today. I know. I blew it.
You blew it, man.
Doing a modern update.
Yeah, there you go.
It's product placement. Let's just kind of say it's product placement. We're getting a cut from Sylvania. That's how we keep the lights on around here, folks.
Exactly. Is she gone again?
And unfortunately, it appears the cyber hacker is causing lots of problems tonight. So it's Barrick, you are the star of the show once again.
So I think that you know, since you really put a lot of time and effort into sort of making it feel like the old Batman TV show, which I don't think any of us maybe fully embraced and experienced the first time around, you know, but had its own sort of, the first time around?
Absolutely. It came on in syndication and I was 8 or 9.
Okay.
And honestly, my God, rural Virginia, 8 or 9, seeing something that colorful, that fantastic, and with that much cool stuff going on. I mean, oh my God, that was our kryptonite. My entire elementary school lived.
Oh, sure.
Four in the afternoon, we would get home and watch 2 episodes of Batman. Oh, we go from the start. Yes, absolutely.
I have to say, Yvonne Craig awakened something in me, but that's another podcast. Mm.
Julie Newmar for me, but I would never say anything bad about Yvonne Craig.
But I think that the idea that, you know, I think the episodes aired back to back and they were generally two-parters. So you sort of had your first part and then like tune in next time, meaning like wait till after a bunch of commercials and come back again. But, you know, so this game sort of seeks to capture that idea of 2 episodes being part of a greater whole. In sort of the pacing of it. And I'm a big fan of, you know, when sort of looking at a genre of trying to emulate the pacing and feel of it, not just in terms of how you do the storytelling, but in terms of the game mechanics itself. So it sort of feels like, oh, and here's the break. And you know, here we go there. And that's something Cynthia's been working on for years, you know, starting with Cartoon Action Hour way back even in season one of Cartoon Action Hour, which wasn't called season one, just like Star Wars wasn't called A New Hope.
You guys kind of have a cool niche at doing, you know, I want to call them media emulation games.
Oh, it's genre emulation. That's the spectrum jam. That sort of emulation of a genre, trying to think about the way something works and design a game so that it does, so it immerses you in that through the game mechanics, as opposed to just like, you know, having the art that looks like it. And And none of this is a knock on any other game, but sort of having it be, there she is. Look at that.
I had to go get Shelly's phone. My piece of crap tablet just wasn't cutting it, so.
All right.
No Here worries. Good to see you.
Yeah.
So,
tagging you back in there, Cynthia.
There you go. Hot tag.
Okay, where are we at?
We were talking about genre emulation as your design philosophy. And I'm looking at this cool art of a woman who I think is perhaps supposed to evoke Julia Newmar, which Chris had just mentioned.
Yes, absolutely. That was done by Brent Sprecher. And he is one of our core artists. He always turns out such great characters. Like, whenever he does a character, he just, like, pulls something out of it. I just love him. And he's a cool guy, too. Our artists really rose to the occasion on this, and especially considering that we had a lot of people end up, you know, having to drop out for various personal reasons, and we'd tag somebody else in and they would take over, and it turned out, I think, very well.
Yeah, there's a lot of beautiful art in this. I've just been flipping through it, been really impressed. What was playtesting like for this?
Nightmarish.
Thanks, COVID.
Thanks, COVID. Well, actually, no, it's nightmarish because I couldn't get it right for a long time. The climactic fight scenes that was at the end of each episode, that's what threw me. That was one of the bigger design challenges I have because, like, for one thing, there's just one out of many. You had a situation to where, if you remember, in all those big fight scenes, the big rollicking, rolling, chaotic affairs,
you didn't really have, like, he knocks this mook out, and the mook didn't get back. Everybody's in the fight scene till the very end. You know, those henchmen are in it. You don't knock them out, and they're suddenly not a part of this. So that was a very big challenge, actually, how to keep everybody in there. And initially, it wasn't using the attention system. There are two other systems. Actually, kind of three other systems that I had tried, and it just didn't. They didn't feel right. And so we've been in playtest. This is embarrassing, but since 2019, I could not get a handle on exactly how to do it. And I literally woke up one morning. This is not a one of those figuratively speaking things. I literally woke up with the solution in my head, and I ran in there and jotted it down before I forgot, and then literally called my oldest son, who is my lead playtester, because nobody in the whole universe can find loopholes and rules like him.
Mm-hmm.
He delights in it. Oh, anyway, so. So I called him, and we gave it a whirl that day or that evening. And it was like, it was still a little rough at that point, but I knew that this was the direction. And it took some working. The cards used, that went through a lot of different iterations. Originally, during fight scene A, which is the one where the heroes usually lose at the end of the first episode of the two-part story, usually what happened was the game master had a hand of X number of cards. And then for the climactic fight scene B, which is where the heroes usually come out on top at the end of the final episode of the story, the heroes were the ones that got cards. And they would play them. But it came down to where there was so much other stuff going on that people would forget to play the cards, and it felt off. So they became in the current version of the cards, where at the beginning of each segment, you flip one over, and that is a narrative tool. I really wanted to move toward the narrative side of that. That's why there's a whole narrative part of each card. And I went through to get those and studied all those fight scenes rigorously to find out what were some of the common things that would happen. And then I had to go about figuring out what was the best way to. But so playtesting, it was pretty crazy hard and intensive. But once it clicked, there was like a week period where I went from going, God, how the hell am I going to make this work, to we've got it. It was just like a 1 week period out of all that year, or 2 years, whatever it was.
Yeah, I love it when a plan comes together, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sorry I'm not as articulate as normal, but this, I'm on cold medicine right now, and whoo.
I've got Mucinex and a few three other brands with an easy reach in my current position, so I'm feeling pain. It's all right. So, well, this looks like a lot of fun. I'm going to try to get through the rules the next few months, see if I can do a little place. We've got a regular Mondays game we've been doing on lunchtime.
Oh, that'd be awesome.
Yeah, see if we can make that happen. So what comes next for Big Fan Kapow? I understand that's a cheeky question after 3 years of hard work.
And I've had a lot of ideas, and I'm actually meaning to talk with Barak and Norbert about some things. But I definitely want to do something villain-focused.
Mm-hmm.
I would like to do something that has like a whole bunch of stock death traps and tons of story seeds, and of course tons of villains, maybe new options for villains. But basically would like to do a villain focused product, and maybe even before then though an adventure or two. But as far as like, you know, major supplements, that's kind of my thoughts.
Okay. Quick question, how do you guys handle death traps, because that was a huge part of that TV show?
Well, we actually have a whole, there's actually two sections in there about death traps. The first one is just an overall, you know, and that's in the Game Master section, where it talks about the different jobs and you as writer. you have to kind of come up with it. But we have a section later on in the game mastering advice section to where we talk about how to handle them mechanically. And there's actually three different ways that you can handle them. One is you can just essentially freeform it. Another, you can do it in a series of steps with an intention, you know, representing a step in the process. And then, of course, there's, you know, the one intention does it all. So, and we go into that in great detail, probably more than I should have. But I have a problem with brevity, folks. I do. This was going to be a 30-some page book. I'm not even joking. And it's 40, so.
Oh, cool. It looks like a lot of fun. I can't wait to check it out. So, Barrett, what was your role in creating the book?
Well, I mean, it was obviously the intention system was the sort of start of it, and I helped. You know, Cynthia had a vision for this. So, you know, when I found when that happens, just let it go and chime in as needed along the way. And I've loved seeing it sort of come into play. I had a question for Cynthia, which I've never actually asked, but I can ask now. I was wondering if Urban Manhunt played into sort of the use of cards, because that's such an elegant use of cards as sort of a pacing mechanism. And although it's not narrative in a sense, it definitely sort of so I'm curious if the implementation of cards in Urban Manhunt inspired or helped Biff Bam Kapow move towards the use of cards in it.
Absolutely, yes. In fact, the idea of, because in Urban Manhunt, for those who don't know, at the beginning of each turn, when it's a new player, they become the first player, you flip over a card, you draw a card, and if it says, you know, put it in your hand and put it, otherwise it gets played and whatever happens, happens. But it stays in, that whole thing stays in effect for that turn. And that's more or less the way this is, just on a smaller scale, because only a segment is basically when the camera focuses on, say, Batman. And Batman does stuff, and the henchmen do stuff, and the Batman does stuff to them, and that little segment. And then they switch to somebody else. Well, that whole time the camera's on Batman is what we call a segment. And that's how long, say hello, Shagamuffin. And so.
Oh, cute kitty.
Yeah, she's a sweetheart. Mm-hmm. And so. Lost train of thought. So it stays into effect for the entire segment in which one hero acts. And then when it becomes the next player's segment, then they get to flip over a card. So you go through cards a lot faster in this than you do in Urban Manhunt.
Yeah.
But we do offer them for free on the website and in the back of the book if you want to just photocopy them or whatever folks do these days. But we're going to be offering them as professionally produced cards. In fact, tomorrow I'm going to be spending some time getting those formatted and sent for approval. So,
yeah, it always takes a few minutes at a drive-through RPG. By minutes, I mean weeks or months. But
that's the case now, it seems like. Sure.
Oh, man. Yeah.
I mean, but you know, worldwide we're facing shortages and this, that, and every other thing. So, oh, well.
Yeah, someone just pointed out to me one of my books we had to do a hardcover version of. It's now, the full retail price is almost $80 for a $150 print on demand hardback, and it's just cost of paper, supply chain problems. It's crazy.
So, yeah, I mean, the shipping costs are insane when mailing stuff out now, like it's just ridiculous. So,
yeah, I had to when I was figuring out, you know, the hardback and stuff for this, I was looking at, jeez, because most of our hardbacks are a lot thinner than this. And I was just, the price, I was just, my eyes bugged out of my head. I'm like, man. And so I was looking, and we're going to have to basically charge about $45 to make this profitable.
Yeah.
And so I decided at that point I'm going to offer a softback with with the non-premium paper as well. So that way people don't have to shell that out if they don't want to. But we just couldn't viably do it. You know, we got to keep the lights on and all that fun stuff. But,
I completely understand. I feel like we should point out that there has been kind of an official resurgence in this genre. Up until a few years ago, DC was publishing Batman 66. And you can still find it on Comixology. Oh my, that's a very small cover. Let me see if I can blow that up a little bit.
Well, they also have DC's doing, what is it, Superman 77? 78. And they did a Wonder Woman one. So.
And now they're doing Batman 89.
Yeah, Batman 89, mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah, here's the crossover between Batman 66 and Wonder Woman 77. So
that is so cool.
Nostalgia is big business.
It is. It is big business.
I actually wanted to see this show and a Batman's Christopher Reeve Superman crossover back in the day.
Yeah. Oh, man.
Never happened in a million years, but yeah, it's fun to think about.
Would have been epic.
Well, I'm sure at the time Adam West would have been happy to do crossovers with either of them. So,
oh yeah, I would agree with that.
Yeah, it was a really fun series too. I don't know if you guys checked it out. The first few, they were really experimenting with. They would with the comic online comic format. So they would you know, who was the crazy guy who played the Riddler, Chris?
What? Frank Gorshin?
Yeah. I don't think that the character would look like him. And, you know, all of a sudden he would, you know, turn to face the viewer and the image would go super saturated from one panel to another. You know, as he would just to sort of portray his intensity sometimes on camera. What's that someone say to me? I always was kind of afraid Frank Gorshin was going to kill Adam West.
Oh, my.
Some of those scenes. Because he just seemed legitimately unhinged sometimes. And that's yeah. It can be hard to convey on paper. So. But no, this looks like a lot of fun. I wish Norbert Franz could have joined us. I know he was involved. Was Norbert doing character write-ups for you, or what was his role?
He was mostly editing, but like with Barack, a lot of feedback. You know, I'd bring different issues to them, and then they would give their thoughts on it and such like. But mostly, they kind of just stayed out of my way. Not that they're in the way, but I mean, they're just like, okay, let's let her do this. And then I'd come to them when, you know, it's like, hey, what do you think about this? Or what do you think about that? And especially early on when I switched over to using the intention system, I had to pick Barack's brain in particular a few times. And so, but a lot of feedback in general. We work really well together as a team. And we each have worked together so long that we kind of know when to step in, kind of when to let them do their own thing. Like when Barack was doing Kate's Cowls and Villains Foul, I was like, you know, do your thing, send this stuff to me if you need any help. And he would crank out this really cool stuff, you know, and that's just how we operate. We don't have
a typical sort of like, you know, hierarchy of this, that, and every other thing. And it's very much like, work on your thing and let's make it happen. And then we'll, you know, help clean it up and, you know, make it awesome.
It becomes a jam session in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
I like the hippie commune approach to book production myself too. So,
yeah. And it works for us. You know, every team has their own, some teams are, you know, meticulously like organized and structured. Some aren't. We're kind of in the aren't. But what we do, we play off each other so well, and we work together enough that, I mean, it's like jazz musicians, you know, we just start jamming, and we kind of know what we're doing somehow or another.
Sweet. Chris, you've been kind of uncharacteristically quiet tonight. Do you have any thoughts or questions?
Well, I haven't even got an intro yet, so I don't know if I was going to say. Supposed to just jump in and interrupt people or what?
Chris, I'm...
It says you're the boss, so.
Well, we're all entitled to our delusions, aren't we?
Chris, I've been amiss as a host. Please forgive me. It's the long COVID. My brain meat just isn't working the way it's supposed to.
Well,
right now.
We love you. We want you to get better. That's the important thing.
Ladies and gentlemen, directly beneath me in the Brady Brunch grid is Christopher McLaughlin, our frequent co-host on these weekend podcasts.
Thank you. Thank you.
The pit boss of Ghost Show Press. Chris.
Yes, indeed.
I'm handing the imaginary microphone off to you.
all righty. Well, a curious question here. Mm-hmm. Okay. the obvious influence here is the legendary Adam West show, and absolutely nothing wrong with that. I mean, geez, how many other things from 1966 are we still talking about today?
Well, man, I'm fans of Fate. Other than that, yeah.
I walked right into that one, and I don't
you
care.
Walked right into it.
I did. Did you find any other influences as you went along? Because for those of us who have completely wasted our lives, we remember that this was the Adam West thing had a little boomlet in shows like Mr. Terrific and Captain Nice. Yeah. And I guess in a roundabout sort of way, you might be able to tie the Green Hornet into this a little bit. Depending on how much of your life you've misspent, the god-awful Wonder Woman pilot that they did.
Yeah. Okay, I'm familiar with every single thing you mentioned.
Which is why I love you.
But I'd be lying if Wonder Woman played any role in it. I've seen it, the pilot. So, no, that was no influence.
Good.
The other stuff, no. I mean, honestly, there's three things that influenced this. I'm not going to lie. We know what one of them is.
Mm-hmm.
The other is, of course, the Green Hornet. But the other one might take you a little bit by surprise. And it's another Dozier-helmed project that never came to fruition. And that was the pilot, the unsold pilot for Dick Tracy.
Ooh.
It was kind of a halfway point between the gonzo goofiness of Batman and the slightly more grounded, more serious Green Hornet. It was kind of that middle ground there. And I know he's not a superhero, but he was kind of almost presented as one to a certain degree in there, you know. So those are the three. Familiar with the other stuff, but they had very little to no influence here.
I mean, I always like, and I, you know, not that I would chime in and tell Cynthia, but I always took away from it that it was definitely also influenced by sort of the, you know, because you have, you know, the comics came first, then there was the TV show, but then the comics had to sort of try and replicate that. And comics continued to do so even through the 70s with, you know, some wackadoo villains and this and that. And it didn't necessarily have the campy tone of it, but the villain certainly sometimes had, you know, campy tones to them. I mean, that continues today to Batman. Obviously, they've turned them all into brutal psychopaths. But I've always viewed it as, like, thinking about, you know, sort of the awesomeness of that era of comics where it was just, you know, issues were self-contained. You had a villain. There was a conflict. It was resolved. And sort of, you know, that was that. And, you know, there was an era of positivity with your heroes.
Oh, absolutely. And my love of Silver Age comics is no secret. And so to say that that didn't play in would be, you know, folly. But yeah, so that was definitely in the back of my head, although I kept having to pull myself back to television because it's such a different medium for Superman.
Oh, yeah.
At the time, I had to consciously go, nope, that's more like the comics. Reel it in there, Cynthia.
Yeah.
Reel it in. But yeah, the influence definitely spilled in. There's no two ways about it.
I just discovered that William Dozier actually co-created Barbara Gordon.
Oh, yeah, she was a creation for the TV show.
Yeah.
Yep, absolutely. Yep. She is that show's Harley Quinn.
Yeah.
In that she started there and they integrated her into the comics.
Yep.
Yeah, that's some fun stuff with modern characters back in the milieu of Batman 66. Harley Quinn showed up. They had Bane show up as a, I want to say he was a Mexican wrestler.
Yeah,
with walk-on appearances by El Santo and Blue Demon. I mean, that was some next-level awesome right there.
Nice.
Now, this is the Batman 66 Green Hornet crossover written by Kevin Smith, so that will right there tell you if you would like it or not.
So how late is the final issue?
Huh?
So how late is the final issue?
It'll come out tomorrow, I think.
It's been, what, 3-4 years at least, I'm guessing?
You are correct, sir. I like Kevin Smith, but I can't defend his work ethic sometimes. But
he is responsible though for my favorite gag entertainment headline ever though. Right. What's about that? The time that he was out there defending Ben Affleck getting cast in Batman versus Superman, some parody news site posted the headline: "Guy who stoned all the time says Affleck is a great Batman."
That is a libel.
Not libel.
It can't be libel because it's true.
Yeah, I mean, Kevin Smith has admitted that, like, he loves to smoke pot all the time and can't be creative these days without it. So,
yeah, I live in Colorado. I can't get mad about that.
Well, you could, but then you just step outside and you're like, oh, I feel really mellow.
I'm okay, but I don't know. It's okay that the mail is late and that the food delivery is late.
I live in Massachusetts, so it's the same thing. So.
Yeah, yeah. Now, my poor father moved out here a few years ago, and he's perpetually enraged that they voted to legalize it here in town. And I think in his mind, it's strictly the province of jazz musicians. But, but yeah, this is Alex Ross art for Batman 66.
Yeah.
So, that is fantastic.
Yeah, it's almost photorealistic, just beautiful stuff. Mm. That might be the Alfred copter there in the background. So,
he actually paid Burt Ward to put the suit back on and draw from that. I'm pretty sure.
No,
doesn't that sound like an Alex Ross thing to do though?
It it does. I know he likes his life models. But, is Burt Ward still around?
Yes, he is. He's actually responsible for one of the funniest con experiences I've ever had.
Oh, well, please share.
Okay, well, here you go. Visual aid. I'll be right back.
Okay.
There you go. All right, one of the happiest days of my life here. Okay, there you go. Professor McGee.
Oh my God.
Batman and Robin. What a day, huh?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Cool.
Thank you. Nice. So my two great stories about this is I always make it a point to, if I'm talking to somebody famous, to ask them about the most obscure project they've ever done. So I had a great 20-minute conversation with Adam West talking about his legendary failed pilot Lookwell that Robert Smigel and Conan O'Brien did for him and that NBC refused to pick up because it was too funny. So we had 20 minutes talking and laughing about Lookwell, and West and I were laughing so hard, he actually forgot to sign that picture. So I had to go back to the con staff and say, "Mr. West didn't sign my picture." It said, "Well, we'll try to get you up there, but just as a courtesy, let's ask the next guy in line if it's okay." And when you know it, next guy in line is doing like a picture perfect Frank Gorshin Riddler cosplay.
Oh my God.
So I had to ask the Riddler if I could cut line. And the Riddler is a solid dude. The Riddler did me a solid and let me get back up there and get a quick signature and get out.
Nice.
So we go to Burt Ward next. And Burt Ward, for those of you that don't know, is getting through his golden years selling his own homebrewed dog food.
Yep.
And by this point in my con experience, I'm back in line with my awesome wife here, who is the world's biggest dog nerd. I'm looking to pump him for information about his rather dodgy autobiography. But before I get anything else out, he looks at my wife and goes, "Do you have dogs?" Phone is out in an instant. And Burt Ward there gets to look at pictures of my bulldog for a good long time. So, and they weren't allowed pictures at the table, but in my mind, there's this great picture of my late departed bulldog Maggie and Burt Ward oohing on over her picture. So God bless Burt Ward and his, I'm sure, completely healthy and FDA approved and all that dog food. Cause there you go. Two great con memories with two great guys.
Yeah. Okay. I've always found that engaging a convention guest about something a little obscure can put a smile on their face as long as it's not weird. I also, when I get comic artists, I'll say, draw your favorite Peanuts character. And they will all just sort of shake their head and then, you know, be like, of course I have a favorite Peanuts character. So except for one artist. There's one artist who said I can't do justice to to Charles Schulz. And he was truly sincere. Like, he was like, I'll do anything else you want. I just can't do that. So
there was a year that Ron Glass was at Gen Con riding off of his Firefly fame.
Yep.
And my usual running mate, Mr. Hal Mangold, the guy who did the cover design for my transgressive. We were discussing like abusing our exhibitor badges, jumping, like getting in line before the spectators were there and seeing how long we could tie up the line, asking him Barney Miller questions. You know, just watching the fuming Firefly fans. So we're like, so are you and Max Gale friends?
Yeah.
You know, what's Steve Landisberg really like? Did you cry the day Jack Sue died? And just thinking like, this could be the highlight of his convention. You know, like the 30, 40 minutes he doesn't have to talk about Firefly. So.
Yeah, for sure. Like
when I met Harley Race at a WLW show.
Oh, yes.
2001. You know, there's a whole line. There's like five or we got there pretty early, but there's like six or seven people ahead of me. And they're like, oh, I loved you as the king and stuff. And I'm going, and it's a known fact that Harley did not love that gimmick. And but he put on a smile, but you know, you could see his like, 7 years. Another question. And it was one after the other. And I get up there and I asked him about his time on Stanislaus Nabisco's farm when he was young, 14, 15, 16 years old, whatever.
Awesome. It
was. And he just like looked up, like, what the? And he smiled. And he talked to me for like, I don't know, 10 minutes about that. And everybody in line behind me is like, come on. So I'm holding up the line while he's reminiscing about his teenage years.
Oh, that's great. That's great.
That is, I love Barney Miller. And I had a moment of my own mortality. It starts upon me the other day. I was talking to my kid's skateboarding coach and I dropped some reference to Dukes of Hazzard. And he was like, what the fuck are you talking about? speaking of TV shows the millennials might not know about, here is a crossover between, they're not calling it the Avengers, but Steed and Mrs. Peel in Batman 66.
Yes. That is so cool. I didn't know that was a thing.
They did so much fun stuff with Batman 66. I mean, of course, there's an Archie crossover because it's Archie and he crosses over with everything now.
Yeah.
Archie's
I'm reminded of when the guys at Hero Games were showing off like the very first generation character creation software, and they were demoing him with this huge, as they described. Now look at this huge, overly muscled green guy in purple pants that we don't have the rights to, but you can do him with our software.
Well, if they called those two people by the name they often went by on their TV show, it'd be problematic. So, well, this has been a lot of fun. I really want to like to play this game right now, but it's, you know, almost 11 o'clock Eastern on a Saturday night. That's probably not going to happen, but I'll read this book and soon. So, let me just share that banner one more time. Please support these folks. Pick up this fun game. It looks like more fun than you can have legally in most places that aren't Colorado. And that's a callback. It's the highest form of comedy. In the back. Barrick, what are you doing, sir?
I was pointing at you. I was giving you. There you go.
Oh, thanks.
You're right above me.
Yeah, I call it the Brady Bunch Grid because, of course, I do. Yeah, it's fun. But yeah, they're on DriveThruRPG right now. It just came out a couple days ago. It's there for your gaming fun and needs, and please support it. Chris, I am so sorry I didn't give you an intro earlier.
I'll go out in the most lowbrow way possible here. So here we go.
Okay.
My other favorite part of this picture is if you look real closely, this is my awesome friend Amy Campbell. She's holding a copy of Bert's rather dodgy autobiography in her very classy I Heart Dick picture. We walked into the room. Adam West noticed it and cracked up immediately and kept trying to point it out to Bert Ward. So shout out to Bert Ward for getting back at us by pointing at his crotch in the photo. There. Yes. There's the guy who's giving your money, your con money, your dollar right there.
Nice.
So, yes. So salute to both those guys and my other favorite awesome duo, you two, who keep putting out awesome games.
Aw,
thank you.
I didn't know this podcast was going to wind up with a close-up of Bert Ward's crotch.
It's what you invite me on for, right?
And a regular viewer, and he's been on the show at least once, Ron Sean Barris says, Ron Glass reminds me of when I met Henry Winkler. of him being a producer on MacGyver. I did not know that.
Didn't know that either.
Yeah.
Henry Winkler's been on so many things. I broke a leg a few years ago, and so I watched Parks and Rec. If you're familiar with that show, you know Henry Winkler.
Yes. Yeah. Diana.
One of my favorites.
Here's a favor and check out the Stranger Danger video he makes in character as Henry Winkler and the Fonz.
What? Where is this at?
I the guys at Found Footage Festival introduced it to me. So it's somewhere. I'm not sure what old videotape they found it on, but it exists. It is a thing.
Oh, I'm guessing it's on YouTube somewhere.
Oh God!
Back in the days of trading VHS tapes.
Yes. Yes.
Back in the day. you know what? I just found one more Batman 66 crossover cover. Let me share this with you guys.
Facts of Light. Batman 66 Facts of Light.
Petticoat Junction. No.
Batman. No.
Oh, yes, of course.
Oh, yeah. That's awesome.
That actually would make a lot of sense in universe for both of those shows.
Maybe yeah.
I totally got to get that from my dad. He's a huge Man from Uncle fan.
I wish they would reboot that franchise in a proper way, but yeah, a lot of fun. So, well, hey, thanks for coming on. This has been great. Anyone, closing thoughts, questions before we call it a show?
Well, I hope everybody enjoys the game if they get it. It's low prep. It's, you know, doesn't take a whole lot of time to play. Each session you can play through. It's pretty easy to get one wrapped up in 60 to 90 minutes. Not even kidding. The intention system is fast and just versatile. And I think that the breadth of different games that we've powered with it shows that. I mean, from Retro Star to Stories from the Grave to On the Air. I mean, old time radio, come on. And then this, yes. I mean, it created a really cool engine, and we're having a lot of fun yanking it this way and yanking it that way to get the most out of it.
So. And I there's nothing in the works other than talk, but we have discussed and you know, before Retro Star was even released, we discussed the idea of an 80s action TV show sort of version of Retro Star. So your A-Teams, Knight Riders, Airwolf, stuff like that. So we have thought about that, and there's wheels. They're turning slowly. They're on the back burner, but they're there. So when we get some time, we'll get that out. So I'm participating in. So both Cynthia and I are involved with the Bodana Group, which is a nonprofit advocating for therapeutic gaming, and they have their online convention this week. And I'm running a game of Capes, Cows, and Villains Foul. And there's another group of gentlemen who are running a game of Retro Star. And it's a little bit different business model than other conventions. You pay for the game you want to play, and that's it. So I sent a link in the private chat, and yeah, awesome. So I don't know if Cynthia's doing anything. I mean, it's on the holiday weekend, which is difficult for some people if it's not in person because they're like, but I want to go look at leaves or whatever. So. But it's literally a nonprofit organization designed to support and advocate for therapeutic gaming. So I'm going to be doing that next weekend. So if you want to do something fun, stop on by and see me or check out any of the other games.
And I'll be doing a couple of panels as well.
Yeah, I wish I have just the Saturday off from work. So I'm trying to jam as much stuff as I can in there. So you may see me at a gaming table in the afternoon before I'm running in the evening. So.
Sweet. Sounds like a fun event to check out. For any of our audio-only listeners, that's startplaying.games/events/save-against-fear. So
yeah, and you can just, if you type in save against fear into a search engine, it'll come up there. So.
Oh, yeah.
Sweet. Sounds good. Chris, you have the last word. Anything?
Well, Mike, get better soon because we love you. We can't do this without you. You are the godfather of the Banff family of podcasts. Without you, and you too, you keep making awesome games.
Because
without you guys, I'd be out of the whole rotten show entirely. But you guys keep it real. You keep it good. You keep it fun. So
please keep
being among the class people in the industry.
Thank you.
It
means a lot coming from you.
Let me play our high-quality musical outro just to assure people that this is a high-quality bespoke podcast. One second. You have been listening.
I thought we were going out with our barbershop quartet thing. I've been practicing all week, man.
There's rights. We need to be music that you can.
Public domain. It's awesome.
You can't sing "Happy Birthday." That is not public domain.
No.
That is Gregorian chants are no longer under copyright. Just like Batman. I've never seen it. Anyway, we'll catch you next time with the Bat Podcast, folks. Thanks.
Goodbye.